Let's talk about our health. Finding an honest doctor that isn't following in the footsteps of Big Pharma can feel impossible. That's why millions of men and women have turned to one Texas doctor and the seven reasons he says anyone over the age of 50 should be drinking this one thing. It's not milk or another calcium-rich drink. Instead, it's a unique protein that naturally declines with age and is proven to significantly increase bone strength and soothe joint pain. It minimizes wrinkles and cellulite, enhances hair follicle thickness, and even reverses nail damage, with users reporting results in as little as 2 weeks. As a partner of the show, the Texas Doctor is offering X22 listeners up to 45% off his bone joint and ligament restoring formula at getnativepathcollagen.com/X22. It has thousands of five-star reviews and over 4 million jars sold. Every order comes with a 365-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk to try it today. X22 listeners can visit getnativepathcollagen.com/X22 to get up to 45% off while supplies last, or just click the link in the description. Hi, and welcome to the X22 Report Spotlight. Today we have a returning guest, Frank. Frank runs a podcast. He reports on the news. You can find all of his work on quitefrankly.tv. He does a stream weeknights at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I am very happy to have Frank back on the X22 Report Spotlight. Frank, welcome back.
Oh, it's been so long, too long, Dave. I almost thought it would never happen again, but I got to say, that's the first live hi I have heard in a while. And you've got a little bit more of a rasp to it now.
Yeah.
A little more grizzled.
It's what happens when you get older. Your voice. You start losing your voice and everything else.
Well, it's great to be back. Thank you for inviting me. And I can't wait to have you back on, quite frankly.
Yeah, thank you for coming back on. I think the last time you were on was like 22, 21. Long time ago.
It might have been early 22 at the latest.
Yeah.
But here we are. We're almost knocking on the door of 25. We're halfway through 24, and boy, the next 4 months. What's to be said?
I know. I think it's going to be a crazy next 4 months. So, I mean, since we're leading up to the presidential election, do you think that Biden is going to make it? Do you think he'll make it to the presidential election?
If left unmolested, then yes, I think that they'll push that ball over the goal line. And it's really just been about, all right, first things first, let's just secure ourselves a little bit more time. If we really just go back and we do a lot of reminiscing about everything that we watched from 2016 onward happening, we can talk about the nitty gritty of any particular scam at any particular time, whether it be Russia, whether it be scoops of ice cream, whether it be, you know, impeachment one or two. It's really all about buying time, cobbling together months and years, the calendar, getting from one election to the next, figuring out what the hell you're going to do afterwards. Just buy time and take the election. If they have to try to push Joe Biden over the goal line for November and try to make that work somehow, I think they would take that and figure out what to do after the fact. Does he have 4 more years in his physical body? I don't think so. But to be honest, I know we're going to be talking about the assassination attempt at some point today. But Dave, the last 48 hours, I cannot shake the feeling that what happened on Saturday was a way to get rid of both Trump and Biden. I can't shake the feeling. I've seen other people mirror that feeling as well. I believe that they wanted to take Trump out and then turn around and set up the retaliation. I really believe that they want to get rid of both men.
That's very, very interesting. So you think they were planning this to take them both out? It does make kind of sense. I mean, you can see now that they're building the narrative that because the individual was registered as a Republican, which he donated to Act Blue. So I don't think he was a Republican. I think he just probably registered to vote Trump out when the nominations were happening in Pennsylvania. But it's very interesting that you would say that, because they're pushing the idea that there's going to be additional violence. I think the FBI, DHS has come out saying that there might be other political assassinations from extremists.
And that's not our MO. And when I say our, I'm not talking about members of the GOP. I'm talking about anybody that's not on that globalist, totalitarian way of micromanaging mankind into something they believe is utopian and equitable for all, which is in itself just a really crappy facade. But, you know, that the violence MO is not ours. It's always been the state. And of course, sometimes it is delegated out to some of the more mentally deranged foot soldiers that are created through our just cultural grooming process. That is, you know, what has been turned into, it's pretty much MK Ultra that's been turned into a cultural protocol for creating generations of who the hell knows. And I do think that, and what do I have as far as evidence of that? I don't know. I just think that it would be a really logical cascading effect, especially since you see that there is a real effort to convince, at least in a dignified way, to get Joe Biden out of there. But his talons are in there, and at least a couple of the people behind him, especially Jill and a few others of his closest confidants, it seems like they really want to stay, even though Barack Obama has even looked like or sounded like it might be something worth considering to get out there when they're withholding PAC money and everything else like that. George Stephanopoulos went out there running a very different script a week or so ago. And that's not because the networks have suddenly found some integrity, journalistic integrity. It's just they're running a new script. And I think they're very concerned about Joe Biden. And I started thinking, all right, he's old. He's a liability. He doesn't function anymore. Mm-hmm. And you're starting to become expendable at this point. So it just makes sense to me. If there's any evidence that comes up that actually confirms it, we will see. But that's just what I can't help myself from feeling that the last 48 hours.
I mean, you said if he's unmolested, if he is molested, do you think they will put Kamala in his place as the presidential nominee? And how do you think they would remove him? Do you think it'd be they still will put a hit on him? Do you think or remove him with the 25th Amendment?
25th Amendment, I don't know. I don't know. At this point, I just don't know. It's too close. Maybe 25th Amendment if they pull some shenanigans and actually swipe another one where they, like I said before, as long as you get past election week, then what do you do after the fact? Hey, at least we locked up another 4 years. So that just might be the hierarchy of priorities there. Like what do we do here and there? As far as Kamala goes, why pick her as vice president at all? If it was always going to be unthinkable to push her into the limelight for just a little bit. Even if there's a very quick plan to then get her out afterwards, I don't know. It's always about, they always have some considerations about symbolism and glass ceilings, even though she would be a very, very, that would be a really weak first female president. But I always wondered there's plenty of women out there who are progressive and aren't white that you could have put into that spot. You could have nominated to be your vice president when you were running in 2020, especially since anybody could have gone in there polling higher than Kamala. She was polling high. She was, barely polling higher than dirt. And so I never understood that in the first place. But if you're going to go with that, then why, when it's time to ascend to the presidency, are you going to pull a switcheroo for the entire ticket? That I never got. So I always just thought that if he was going to be ushered out prematurely, she was just going to have to take the baton and run with it.
I think in the very beginning, back in 2020, I think Obama actually wanted Kamala. I think he wanted her, but when her poll numbers came out during the Democratic National Convention, she was like polling like 1% or something like that.
Yeah,
it was terrible. So they couldn't use her. It wouldn't make any sense, especially when they cheated in the election. I mean, can you imagine how many ballots they would need? Forget about 80. They would need all of them. So so I think they had to settle on Biden, but I think he still wanted her in there because, again, if you remember that recording from Obama, he goes, I just want you know, someone to be in the presidency and I can be in the basement and I can tell them what to do. I think Kamala was a very easy person to control. She would have done everything he wanted her to do. Biden, on the other hand, he had better poll numbers. He was the VP. And I think that he had to make that choice at the time. But I think Biden is a little bit harder to control. He's kind of stubborn. You can see as he's getting older and his dementia is starting to pick up. He's even becoming even more nastier when he speaks to people. So I think it's much, much harder for him to control Biden than Kamala. And I think he always wanted Kamala to be in that position. I think that's why they kept her, for maybe for future use. I don't know.
It's a good, as valid a theory or an assessment as any, because when you really think about it, when push comes to shove, they never, any time over the last 10 years especially, never really had any good choices to make.
Yeah.
So that's why it was always just a toss-up. I like building character profiles for people. You know what could the pro be over this con over there? But really, is it a good choice compared to what everybody else has as far as raw talent goes? And the other thing is there too is that there really is no room for any kind of improvisation. There's no room for any really good ideas. They're running a very limited script, and it's all about being able to whittle away national sovereignty and kind of melt us into this international stew that is I don't know. They need this. They need to be there to be no more superpowers in the world. And that is that's the path that we're on right now. So no good choices, because the future is not going to provide any good choices if they win. So I guess they're just pushing it. And that's the question I have for you. Just to start off, because now we're talking, we already talked about Biden. What do they do with him? And then, you know, Trump, we haven't talked about what happened on Saturday just yet. But I always wondered, of all the things that could happen this year, if they feel, especially since that horrible, if you want to call it a debate, but ever since that debate, if they feel that they have completely lost any kind of real momentum, any way of getting it back, because it's not about a guy just freezing up and, you know, not able to counter good, you know, data with some stronger data. It's about a guy who has been exposed to the world of being on the outs physically. There's a cognitive degeneration there that you can't make up for. It's even pharmaceutically impossible at this point to really perk him up for much longer than they've been able to do in very short spurts. So I'm saying, what else is going to come our way? Obviously, we have assassinations and stuff, attempts that have already been made this early in the summer. But what about war? Now, what's going on overseas? Very interesting to me. I don't see, because Trump, the main reason why I'm voting for him again was always going to be, the main reason was always going to be peace candidacy. Whatever you can say, there's always something that you can dish out about a person where they fell short or where you think they can get a little bit stronger. But the one thing that everybody should be able to agree on is that there was only de-escalation, military de-escalation in the world. And I would really, really love a little bit of that right now, just a little bit of a stalemate on that respect. So I always wondered if this was going to be something that pops off or made to pop off in the summer, so that if there is a Trump presidency that comes in, if the vote actually is, you know, true, then if he inherits a war, it leaves no room for him to de-escalate a war once he gets in January. There's a lot of time to throw a lot of stuff into his lap on day one of term two. So that's what I'm worried about, especially with all the long range missiles that are being moved around in Europe right now. This is some pretty hot times right now, and we have way too long until the election and inauguration day. So that's what I'm worried about.
Well, I think we are approaching war. I think that is definitely in the cards, because if you go back a little bit in time, it's almost like a year and a half ago, maybe a year and a half ago, where Trump actually put out on Truth that, and he said it in many of his speeches, that he sees war where nobody else sees it. It's going to escalate. And that's why he's continually saying, I know all the players, I can usher in peace. And if you notice, Viktor Orban, he has been visiting Russia, Ukraine, China, then came back to Trump. And of course, the fake news puts it out, you know, he's trying to put together a peace plan without a plan. So I think Viktor Orban is out there speaking to all these individuals. I think they know that the deep state is going to try to push us into war. I think we will get very, very close to war. I even think there'll be some type of major scare event, because again, how do you convince people there's going to be a war? You actually have to scare them into thinking we're going to war.
Yeah.
You just can't say it. You can't say, hey, by the way, we're going to war. When you look at Pearl Harbor, when you look at 9/11, something happened and it scared the people, and it scared the people enough to accept war. People normally do not accept war. They don't want to send their children, they don't want their parents or their cousins, brother, sisters, mother. They don't want anyone to go to war. So the only way I see the deep state doing something is with some type of an event. And I think from what Trump is saying and what he's been saying in the past and even in the present, that he knows the players, he can have peace if I'm elected. Of course, if he's not elected, it's going to be war. So I think as we get closer to the presidential election, I think probably around August, that time frame moving forward, I think we're going to see things really start to escalate, and we're going to start to see that we're moving towards war. And
I just got to put it in there too, is that this is another real reason why the significance of the attempt on his life on Saturday was so much more far-reaching than anybody really at first glance could understand, because there's a holding pattern here that I really do feel there's considerations for that. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, Vladimir Putin, he has shown incredible control, and I thank God for that. I'm at the point where part of my daily prayers is that Vladimir Putin has a greater plan to preserve mankind, has a plan to preserve mankind that's greater than the kamikazes at NATO's desire to flatten mankind. And I think about what was going on in Ukraine during Trump's term, especially leading up to 2019, when they were winding down the Russiagate nonsense, and then going around September, kind of leading us into impeachment and the Ukraine phone call, Burisma, all of the poking around that's been going on out there. Vladimir Putin knew exactly what was going on in Ukraine. He knew exactly what kind of a satellite state that was. That's a deep state mm-hmm. shell company. It masquerades as a country, but it's a shell company. He knew what was going on out there, and knowing that he has common enemies with Donald Trump, that their enemies are, those are held in common. I think that that's one of those things where just sit back, let's see what Trump can get done. And while he's still on the playing field right now, mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the people out in the world who see what is being stoked in Eastern Europe and what really dangerous game is being played, as long as Donald Trump is alive and is climbing in the polls and has a real chance of overwhelming all the fraud attempts that might and will be coming his way again in November, that is a very, very important thing, knowing that he is still floating out there and he is still a man that can be negotiated with and to save the world at that level. So for him to still be alive right now is huge, because who knows how much more resolve Vladimir Putin would have if he knows that, you know, okay, well, I was waiting to see if there's some kind of sanity that could be restored over there at the State Department in the United States after January, if Trump would win. But if he is just gone, if he's not even on the earth anymore, right, then it might just be go time, that nobody else is coming to our rescue. We might just have to duke it out with the new Soviet Union, which is NATO. So I've been thinking about that a lot too. There's a lot that could be missed because of the gravity of and just the drama of what happened over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, if they did take him out, they would have no problem pushing their agenda. It would be very, very easy, because there would be no one on the side of peace. And actually, if you look back in history, there are not many presidents that actually call for peace. Normally, if there is an event in the country, usually everyone says, okay, let's go to war. We got to strike back. If there is an event in this country, I don't think Trump is going to say, let's strike back. I mean, I use examples in my reports where, let's say there's a missile that's fired over the ocean or something and it's intercepted. Will that scare people? Yes. If there's a cyber attack, will that scare people? Yes. I think Trump is going to be on the side of saying, you know what? Let's have peace. Let's talk to these people. Actually, Putin has already said he's open to listen to Trump. He thinks he's sincere. Zelensky actually said, well, if Trump has a peace plan, let's hear it. And Xi is pretty much saying the same thing. So it seems that they're on board with hearing from Trump about this peace plan. And I think as things ramp up, because, you know, with, like you said, from the very beginning with the long range missiles, the treaty is pretty much gone. So now you can have mid range, long range missiles. They can be delivered to NATO countries that are very, very close to Russia. And Russia can deliver the missiles, say, to their warships that are docked in Cuba or to North Korea now, or right up to the border of the NATO countries. So yes, I mean, will this look like another Cuban missile crisis? Yeah, it could, in all reality, because if you look at the reports, I think Biden and other leaders, I think German leader and maybe even France, they've given Ukraine permission to fire the missiles into Russia, which, I mean, I think that tells you everything you need to know right there, what they're trying to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's not very, very naked at this point, and it's psychopathic. You know, there's a, I always say that when you analyze, you know, domestic current events or even anything on an international level, it's really incredible when you come to the realization that, yes, there is geopolitical histories, there is economic considerations that you have to, even just basic economic considerations, what tariffs do, this and that. But then when you get beyond just supply and demand, or tribal differences, age old, you know, feuds between countries, anything that completes the telling of our story as a world, the fact that you have to, on top of it, add a new layer of perspective that you have to think like a psychopathic criminal. Like, you have to think like the criminal class to say, okay, if your job was to really neuter the sovereignty of nations, to diminish the true diversity of cultures in this world, the ethnic backgrounds of the nations of Europe. What you think about the open borders on both Eastern and Western hemispheres? What that all means? Like, you have to be able to think in a way that normal people don't think, which is why I think it's just so hard for people to grasp what kind of a movie we're living in right now. Like Independence Day is nothing compared to what reality is right now. I mean, they're cutting the world up and playing it like a game of dominoes, and it is just so incredible. And unless you have something that breaks your trust in the system first completely, you really can't see it, because average people just, I don't think they can conceive of the evil and the duplicity and the Machiavellian approach to everything. It's serious. It really is. And it's just so much, the stakes just get higher and higher, because now we're talking about the lives of millions and millions of people just for a game of what, chicken, while these people, you know, they found nice little bunkers and alcoves that are going to shield them from one bit of fallout or another. But my, oh my, Dave, they really do not care about cracking a whole lot of eggs to make this crappy omelet.
No, they don't. And I think the deep state, the evil people, they're counting on that the people with their moral compass, they won't go to that area where they believe that they could do things like, you know, bring us to war or release a virus or anything like that. And I think they count on that sometimes. I think they count on the people saying, no, that they could never do that. They could never actually plan. Talk about our health. If you suffer from daily pain, I need you to listen to this message very carefully. What we know about pain relief is changing forever. As we age, aches and pains are normal, and we're all searching for an effective way to relieve pain without side effects and addictions. Let me be frank. We have all seen the horrors of the opioid crisis. You may even be affected personally. And that's where a pioneering medical scientist comes in, Clint Winters. You may have seen this world-renowned expert featured in national media as he unveils a natural pain reliever that has taken the world by storm. Yes, I'm talking about Conaldine, the 100% drug-free temporary way to get full body pain relief without dangerous pills. As you read this, the Clonalidine has become the go-to pain reliever for over 1 million Americans and hundreds of professional athletes. It's so powerful, it was even named the official pain reliever of the UFC, and those guys know a thing or two about managing pain. Now get this. Clint explains how Clonalidine is the only compound on earth that optimizes your body's natural painkillers called endorphins at any age. When taken daily, your body will fire back to relieving pain like you were in your prime in no time. And let me tell you, I was skeptical, but it works. I have tried virtually everything, and I have not felt this great in years. It's just like my daily aches and pains just faded away. My back, neck, joints all feel great and renewed. Best of all, Clonalidine doesn't make me feel the least bit groggy. I feel great, alert, and ready to take on the day. And the best news, Clonalidine has no documented side effects after 14 years of extensive testing. Hear me when I say this, Clonalidine is absolutely the future of pain relief. So whatever you do, make sure to click on the link below this video and check out Clint's amazing informative report on how Clonalidine is changing lives by providing safe and powerful relief at one-tenth the cost of pain pills. Now here's the best part. When you click on the link below today, you can access the only Clonalidine product in the world for less than a dollar per day. Clint has provided this private link until midnight tonight. You are days away from finally beating pain forever. Go to trikono.com/x22 now and see for yourself, or click the link in the description. An operation to kill the president. They would never do that. And there's a lot of people that still don't believe. I mean, I think there's a lot of people waking up. I mean, I've spoken to relatives and many other people that never believed it, but now they're asking a lot of questions because it's getting crazier and crazier. And it's not like in the shadows anymore. It's like right in front of their face. And now they're like confused, like, wait a minute, who's doing this stuff? What's going on here? And I think this is happening more and more, where people are starting to wake up, especially with the assassination. And now, from the very beginning, with your statement of saying that, you know, they wanted to take out Trump, then they wanted to take out Biden. So from what I'm getting is you believe that this was some type of op.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see all the recent updates and statements from the lady head of the Secret Service today?
Cheadle? Director Cheadle?
Yeah, there is let me see here. Says that the decision to leave the roof unguarded, the only structure in the area, mind you. The leave the roof unguarded was deliberate because it was unsafe to have snipers on a sloped roof, even though the response team that took the kid out was on a sloped roof. Like, it makes no sense whatsoever that the roof was sloped. And then, of course, after the fact, when everybody's up there taking pictures of the body, which that in itself, Dave, is just so weird to me. The fact that we have this gruesome face shot of a dead sniper guy on the top of that roof that had to be tweeted out there or something by officials, because there was no civilians up there. It was only response teams. When the hell do we ever get we ever get body shots like that? So everything's so weird. Very, very weird on that. There was a door left open. It was the only door to be opened. And, 30 minutes of response time. That's what everybody had to go 130 yards. 30 minutes. What we've learned in the last 36 hours alone is incredible. So I don't know. It's not even a matter of this woman having to be fired. I mean, she should go to prison.
Yeah.
It's just
her excuse. I don't think it's going to work, because like you said, the other roofs were, you know, sloped. I mean, even if this roof was sloped, you know, had a much larger slope, that's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. And if you're going to protect the president, you need to make sure that the perimeter is secure. And it tells me that this guy was able to bring a ladder, climb up a ladder, bring a rifle. I mean, nobody saw this. Of course they did. I'm talking about the officials.
And it's a police. And he climbed up the side of a building that was the official police staging. So there was probably police inside of the building he was climbing up on. It blows my mind. And go ahead. Sorry.
No, and nobody heard the ladder. Like, nobody heard the guy getting on top or rustling around up top. Nobody heard anything.
I mean, well, Dave, look, here's the other thing you have to consider. Going back a little bit farther than the day of, if you are a sniper in war, or just some kid who is committed one way or another, is committed to doing what he was a part of. Don't you have to go scout out areas? Where is this going to happen? What's going on here? And then you go and you check out, okay, well, there's where the rally is going to be. There's the stage. Let me look around here. Oh, about 100 yards or so off, there is the top of a roof, a garage, a standing structure. Where the hell do you get off even assuming that that is going to be unattended the day of? That you wouldn't you assume that this is going to be swarming with people? It can't possibly be open, but you show up anyway with a rifle strapped to your back and you climb up the side of it and you're given a half hour just to suntan. And it makes no sense. And then when I was thinking about how I've always talked about the impossibility of another JFK situation down there in Dealey Plaza, I said, you think about how in 1963, this situation, people said, oh, if it was an official operation, he would have never missed. I said, well, then you don't know anything about the JFK assassination. There was about six or seven sharpshooters that were involved with that. Cubans, I mean, the CIA brought everybody in for the job, and almost everybody missed until the last couple of shots that came in from the front, as we all know. But I mean, it's not impossible for people to miss their shot, and not for nothing. If President Trump had not turned to the right, the back of his head would be gone right now.
Right.
So that's number one. Number two, I said, it's 1963, and this was all done right there in the open. Obviously, they pulled the Secret Service back so that the motorcade was a lot more, unprotected. So we see an unprotected lane going on there. I said, but they would never try this again because too many people have cell phones. I said, think about how 1963 was all the official stories of the JFK assassination out the window just because of Abraham Zapruder. One guy that they couldn't account for with an 8 millimeter camera right there on the grassy knoll. And here we are again. They despite everything, despite that there were thousands of cameras all over the place, they just did it. And almost got away with it. You cannot do that without institutional help. At least in my personal opinion, how can you do that without institutional help? Obviously, there's a lot of just there was a lot of things that just looked optically bad. And obviously, there is whenever there's a human element to anything, there can be plenty of things that go wrong just because of, I don't know, just sloppy work. Like Dan Bongino had brought up that it wasn't the hardened, detested, true Secret Service people that were really working a lot of the event. It was a lot of people from Homeland Security or something like that that are no less professional, but just not honed in to do that kind of work. So yeah, maybe there would be some gaps, but again, the only roof in the area left unattended, and then the director of the Secret Service comes out and says it's because the roof was sloped. You can't. I can't, no thinking person can accept any of this.
No. They brought in the B team. They brought in, and this was done on purpose. They have a 6 foot tall man and they're bringing in a short woman. How in the world is she going to protect him? It's impossible. Plus, that kid, Crooks, that was on the roof, I think everything got messed up because the people at the rally, they were pointing him out and they were saying, there's someone on the roof, someone on the roof, someone on the roof. And I don't think that was ever supposed to happen. And then the police officer climbed up the ladder, poked his head up, and this is when the kid panicked and started to open fire. He pointed the rifle at the police officer went down, and then he started to open fire. So I don't think this was planned in that way. I think the individual was supposed to open fire at a different point in time, but since someone realized he was up there, he panicked and he started to shoot. Plus, this kid Crooks, back in high school, he tried out for the rifle team and he was the worst shot ever. Like they said, he couldn't even hit the target at 20 yards, which then leads me to believe there's no way that he is the only shooter. I'm thinking there had to been someone else. I think, yeah, he opened fired on, from his position. But then again, if you have, I haven't seen the weapon yet. I don't know if you have, but if you have a weapon, an AR style weapon with a scope, and you have you're laying down on the roof and everything's steady, your target is not moving. It's not like Trump was walking back and forth or anything like that. He was stationary. So if you have a weapon like that, your shot is pretty good if your scope and everything is calibrated. So this kid was a very terrible shot, and I have a very funny feeling that he wasn't the only person. And I think what happened was he panicked and everything went haywire after that.
I'm with you. I'm with you on having suspicions with the kid. And now at first, because they released so many old videos of him, like the BlackRock video was from 2022, right?
Yeah.
So from 2022, he still had a very boyish kind of look to him. He had short hair. And then what we just saw from the roof, his death photo, he has long hair. You know, obviously the nose looked, I mean, but I the more I looked at it, the more I said, okay, yeah, this does look like him. But the question I again is, what happened to him along the way? How is he being used right now? And was he really the only factor in this equation? Especially with the way that they have trotted him out there like a trophy bass. Like the again, Sean, there's something when you don't see something happen the way that happens for so long. You say, well, no, assassinations don't happen every day. No, but random acts of violence do. This obviously is a lot more premeditated than being random. But we don't, there's police before an investigation even kicks off, before the night even comes to, I mean, after the sun had not even gone down over here in Eastern Standard Time. And everybody was, we had the picture of him with his mouth hanging open and his teeth busted out. I said, who the hell released this picture and why? I mean, we don't get pictures like this in a matter of an hour. And there was no civilians up on that roof. There's just very, very strange things. Obviously, he was part of this.
Mm-hmm.
There was a plan that involved him. And he has now, his piece has now been removed from the board. But there's no way in hell that he was anything more than a pawn, at least in my eyes, at least until we get some better information. It just doesn't add up.
Plus, the reports continually came out and said that he was acting alone, a lone wolf, and they didn't even get into his phone. So how can you actually tell everyone that he's a lone wolf, he was acting alone, if they haven't accessed his phone, if they don't know who he's been talking to, which means they already knew that they were going to use this narrative that he was acting alone. And you know the FBI, how they do their investigations. You know they're not going to find out anything. I mean, look, they can't even find the pipe bomber where they know his cell phone. They know where he lived. They knew everything about the pipe bomber, but still, we don't have the pipe bomber. I don't think the FBI is going to do any type of investigation. I think they were in on it somehow, some way. And I think, yes, you're right. They staged that photo up on top because this wasn't, you know, someone just walking up with their cell phone taking that shot.
There's also, too, did you also see the two other videos that were released on this kid? There was I don't know where the hell it came from. I believe he was, you know, they're putting it out there, these two videos from, I guess, from a classroom setting.
Yeah.
To try to build up this idea that he was relentlessly bullied.
Yes.
And I looked at these videos and there's no bullying going on. There's like one video of him out there. One of them is him making some sophomoric statement about the size of his genitals. But I only really got high school nonsense vibes from that. All we did was talk about our genitals in high school. And someone yanks, the other one is someone yanks at the on the end of his jeans in class while the camera girl giggles and he giggles. And it's, are they really trying to give us these two ridiculous, benign clips to build up a motive for him to go on a suicide mission against Donald Trump? And it makes no sense. So I don't know what we get from here on this kid or whether there's a manifesto that is conveniently unearthed or, and, you know, anything can change, I suppose. But it seems like he was a flushable wipe patsy to me.
Yep.
And with the FBI on the case, like you said, would you really be surprised if this ends in another stalemate like Las Vegas, where they just simply said, we'll never know a year later. We'll never know. That's it.
Listen, they don't know whose cocaine it is in the White House either. They just can't figure that one out. So nobody knows anything. So why do we have these agencies? I don't know. I think they're all part of it. So in the beginning, you said you think that they were going to try to take out Trump, then Biden. Do you think they're still going to go follow through with that plan to take out Biden?
I don't know. I guess there is to say that, well, you took a shot at our guy, and now we're going to take a shot at you. I mean, you can still say that this is an issue. I mean, what happened? What happened? Not even 24 hours after after this all took place on Saturday. By Sunday afternoon, you still had George Takei and every other nutcase out there going right back to the approved messaging of mm-hmm. the existential threat message. So I don't, as far as the pit of my stomach, what I start thinking about, yeah, it makes sense to me that every situation can be used and has multiple upsides for the perpetrators. Yet you want, obviously Donald Trump has been the biggest turd in the punch bowl for them for years now. And now, as of the last few months, Joe Biden is a pretty big turd in the punch bowl. They can no longer manage his public appearances in an acceptable way anymore. You can't polish a turd. Mm-hmm. So there are two guys that they would like to get rid of for multiple reasons. And ultimately, what that would do, if both of them are gone, however the hell they make that happen, I don't know. But if both of them leave the stage for one reason or another, think about how big of a sigh of relief that would be for the Uniparty, for the bureaucracy, to know that all of that stress has been immediately alleviated. Whoever the hell steps into the GOP nomination shoes can play up to the Trump base as much as they want. But with Trump really gone and his legacy being ended so abruptly like that, it wouldn't take too long before all the fakers start coming in and wearing the MAGA mask but it would all be controlled. Which also, Dave, I got to say, really brings us back to the bigger question of all, that in 4 years, Trump's political career is done anyway. And what are we going to be afterwards? You know, are we going to be concentrating more like American, traditional Americans would, on local politics? Are we going to be able to say that the central control that has been built up illegally and unconstitutionally in Washington, D.C. will be completely voided by a resurgence of states and the people of those states that would embrace the 10th Amendment? Where are we in 4 years? Because that's we know how quickly time goes by. And before we turn around, it's going to be 2028 again, or 2028.
You're right, and that brings us to J.D. Vance, because that's who Trump picked as his VP. So what are your thoughts on Trump picking J.D. Vance?
You know, I didn't know really too much about him. I was one of those guys, when it comes to VP picks, I understand that you're really just thinking about the next, you know, who are you passing the baton to going on, after you. But I don't know, I don't really know too much about him outside of, I don't know, I would have to imagine that he's at least at a glance going to draw some contested those contested Rust Belt states.
Right.
Perhaps that's the biggest allure right there. Many of those states, from Pennsylvania to Michigan and Wisconsin and all of them, the chicanery that went on out there, I think it was like a total of like 50,000 votes or so in total spread across all those states, really made things bad. You know, that was really the difference maker. So I said, all right, well, maybe he's just thinking about those contested states. But everybody seems to have, when I just look into see how he's being received, everybody seems to have pretty valid opinions across a spectrum of like, neutral, dislike for one reason or another. So I'm just thinking in the immediate, it has to be about the Rust Belt. But I don't know. What do you think? What do you think is the biggest strength of this pick?
Well, I think, I don't know too much about him. I mean, I know who he is, but it's not someone I researched before. But I agree with you. I think the Rust Belt aspect of him getting the people on his side. The other thing I like is that Trump didn't go DEI. He didn't pick just like a black guy or a black woman or just a woman just to fill the spot. I think he looked at who was out there, and I think he narrowed it down to J.D. Vance, where he believes that he is the best pick. He's young. What is he, 39 now? We know that Trump.
So. Something around there.
Yeah, I think Trump, in another 4 years, he's not going to be 70. He's going to be in his 40s. So I'm wondering if Trump is thinking, okay, he handles himself very well. He can debate. He knows the facts. He's a veteran. And he is able to understand what's going on. So what I'm thinking is, yes, the Rust Belt, but I think maybe Trump is thinking, you know, 12 years down the line, 4 years of Trump, and then 8 years of J.D. Vance, where if he picked him, and I think he was probably looking for someone who was at the younger age to attract the younger generation, to attract more people and have him be able to handle the 4 years and another 8 years, because 12 years from now, he's going to be in his 60s, around very close.
There was a little part of me that was hoping for a dark horse candidate like a Rand Paul.
I think we all were like looking like, oh, it can't be someone on the list. It's got to be somebody else.
I was hoping, like, just surprise me with Rand Paul. That would be incredible. I will take the son if we couldn't have the father, no doubt about it. Because I mean, I was a Ron Paul. Ron Paul was really a huge part of my education that I gave to myself, my home based constitutional education and everything else. So I thought that would be an interesting pick. But we'll see. There's always time. We'll see what he stands on. I'll take a look at his foreign policy, and I guess the time will tell. But for now, I really don't know too much.
Yeah.
All I know is that whenever the left is going to call everybody an authoritarian nightmare, so that in itself makes you want to knee jerk just embrace anybody that they hate. But that's not the right way to go either. I don't know. What do you think? Does Vivek Ramaswamy become the press secretary? I think he's best suited for just wrangling a room full of ridiculous reporters. I think that would be a lot of great entertainment factor.
Yeah, let me just say my math was off. He'll be in his 50s when he's done, because he's 40 now plus 12 years, or, you know, 52, not 60s. I don't know where I got that number from. So I don't have a calculator in front of me. Yeah. But I think that Cash, I think General Flynn, I think all these individuals are going to have a place in Trump's administration, either as press secretary, head of FBI, or head of intelligence. I think one way or another, he's going to put these individuals in place. I mean, look, he has Devin Nunes heading up Truth Social as the CEO there. So I think all these people that have been loyal, all these people that have stuck by his side this entire time, never wavered, I think they will definitely be someplace in the administration.
It would be, I hate putting the cart before the horse, but because, you know, it doesn't matter what we know, the actual polling reality and what everything is, we're up against scoundrels. And I really do feel a little timid talking this confidently with you about this in the middle of July, but it's just, I don't know. Every once in a while, I just feel like I just want to let loose and talk about things that should be regardless. And what was it? There was one last thing I wanted to say about that came to mind and then it left. But, that's it. If there is one wish that I have, that if things, I don't expect the chaos to kind of like taper off. I think that we're going to get a lot crazier. It seems like, you know, everybody talks about October surprises. That doesn't exist anymore. The calendar year, especially in an election year, you get a February surprise, a March surprise, a mid-March surprise. I mean, it doesn't stop, you know, especially when you see how desperate people are to win. They don't have the self-control to keep anything big. Whatever they have, they're going to try right off the bat. So I think about this and I say to myself, all right, well, despite all the chaos, if the turnout is as big as we know it can be, and there's no way to really to squirrel this one away and steal it, what is some of the biggest, best things that Donald Trump can do as an individual going forward, aside from just suing for peace? And I still say the best thing he can do from the first time around, I said he should be doing, was appearing on more small podcasts. I think anybody in his position who understands just how evil and detestable corporate media is, even the networks that claim to be center right, I think that the best thing that somebody like him can do is not try to get himself into the studio with Joe Rogan or anybody else. Get onto small pod. You have plenty of people that are working for you. vet out the quality of the host, vet out the quality of the conversation, get onto small podcast. I get onto smaller podcasts and shows. I would love to see more really great historian type people brought on, like real American history people. I would love to see how, I don't know, there's got to be more of a cultural rejuvenation in not only the furtherance of decentralized media, but also really, really big, great efforts for free public education for great teachers out there. Like, I have several friends of mine that I wish were household names just because of what they can bring as far as understanding of where our country came from, the philosophy behind our Constitution. And that right there could do so much more to figure out where we are going to be culturally in 4 years from now, after Donald Trump has, you know, hung up the red tie and is, you know, maybe just, you know, retires to Mar-a-Lago. He's a kingmaker here. He shows up the UFC, but he's not, you know, rallying. He's not campaigning anymore. That, I think, would be amazing. Double down on really, really decentralizing and breaking apart the media. That has to be a huge thing. And along the way, lead people to really great American educators that are all over the place and can really do a lot of good for people who want real solutions, which is get active locally. Thinking and acting locally is the biggest thing that we can do for the years ahead.
So basically, you're thinking like the founding fathers. You want everything decentralized, right? Instead of everyone listening to the big corporate media. Decentralize it, have people, you know, listen to the smaller podcasts, smaller, that are bringing on guests from certain areas, certain towns. And yeah, I think that's a very good way to approach it, because we've experienced the corporate media. We experienced the centralized big conglomerates of like CNN, MSNBC, Fox, and look what we got from them, propaganda. Now, if you actually look at the movement, it has been the smaller podcasts. I mean, think about how many podcasts are out there now. Think about how many people are watching all these different podcasts. And yes, you do have certain ones that are very, very big, but there are many, many others that are smaller that have top quality guests on there, top quality reporting on certain things. And I think that is the future. I think that will be the future. And I wouldn't be surprised if Trump goes out to other podcasts. He already started onto certain podcasts. Yes, they're much larger, but again, he's campaigning.
Yeah,
but
I understand that.
Yeah, I think later on, I wouldn't be surprised if he decides to, you know, get on other podcasts and talk to people. So, I think that's a great idea. I think that's the direction we should be heading in.
And, you know, before we wrap up, Dave, I just want to congratulate you for really, I mean, a lot of people that we know had the rug pulled out from under them on YouTube and other places like that over the last 4 years. But it's been really great to see people like yourself who have really just duplicated your success on far more safer and stable and freer platforms. It must be really nice being out on the other side of that fog, not knowing, you know, just how well you're going to be able to get on with it. And especially on Rumble, I mean, you're almost back to where you were before they pulled the plug on you on YouTube.
Yeah, very, very close. I mean, thank God for Rumble, for True Social, for Elon buying X, because I think without those platforms, if the deep state still controlled everything and we didn't have those platforms, I don't think we would be getting the word out the way we're getting the word out. I think it would be controlled. Everything would be centralized with the social media companies, just like it's centralized with the news companies. And I don't think people would be hearing anything. So I'm very happy that we have these platforms.
That's one last thing. And now you said hearing anything. I would also love to see a resurgence of people who take an interest in traditional terrestrial radio. I think the main reason why I started doing what I do, it's not because I wanted to talk about the news. Current events just became a part of what I did a little bit more so around 2010, 2011. But when we started this, when I started, you know, broadcasting in 2006, it was really just about my love for mass communication and my dream that with building up my chops online, you know, the internet radio would never, ever, ever compete with terrestrial. I want to be on satellite. I want to be on AM, FM. I want to be syndicated. That's what I wanted. I said, I'll just build. And then I just started realizing that, you know, everybody was going digital. And I found myself in a place where it was all coming up in the time where the audience was finally arriving, and I already had some chops, and it was looking good. But regardless of where we go technologically and how industries naturally become obsolete, radio, AM, FM, that will always be miraculous technology. Mm. Perhaps the business model is obsolete of, you know, how everything you listen to is overregulated and it's oversaturated with ads. The business model is definitely, it needs a little bit of fine tuning, no doubt about it. And we need to deregulate the airwaves at least a little bit. I would love to talk about that some other time, but the technology of radio is miraculous. And I really, really hope that we can get back into finding a way of a new foothold in that technology again. You can see George Soros, Media Matters, they open societies, they are gobbling up hundreds of stations all over. They essentially bought, they're buying radio stations and they're buying local newspapers all over the place. And if we continue just to write that off as obsolete dinosaur nonsense, we're losing the plot, especially when it comes to radio. It's a miraculous technology. The human voice is all we need to keep our spirits up, to be able to, you know, to keep ourselves. It's pretty much like the campfire that can be stoked for thousands and thousands of miles. You know, I really, really hope that becomes an interest for people to preserve again one day, because I hate to see it going away, because it's not going to be it's not going to lose its relevance, especially if we ever have any real communications disruption on a digital level. If the internet goes away, even for a couple of days, all we would have is the radio.
True.
So I just want to plant that seed for your audience.
Hey, Frank, thank you very much for coming on the X22 Report Spotlight. So if people wanted to watch your show, where should they go to watch your show?
Well, the best way to learn everything about it is at quitefrankly.tv. I'm live Monday through Friday evenings at 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern time. I am on right there on the website is the video and the chat for pilled.net and Foxhole. But other than that, I'm on Rumble. I'm on DLive. Somehow I'm still on Twitch and YouTube.
Wow.
You know, on a year like this, who the hell knows what the hell happens? But quitefrankly.tv, you can definitely check me out on all the places that you are checking out the X22 Report. And Dave, I'm just really happy that we got to reconnect, and I can't wait until you come back on the show.
Yeah, so am I. I'm very happy that we reconnect, and I can't wait to come on your show. Thank you very much for being on the Spotlight. I'm going to put all the links at the bottom of the video to make it a lot easier for people. Once again, Frank, thank you very much for being on the Spotlight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.